That's a little tune called A Bunch of Blackberries by Abe Holtzman, who was born in 1874. It's from a wonderful disc called Spaghetti Rag, which also happens to be the name of one of the pieces on here as well, and features various ensembles involving mandolins. And in this case, we heard the Center Boys Rag Band here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks for joining us for the show today. We're your connection to local performances. And we've got two features on today's show. Coming up, I'll be talking with Lumar LeBlanc, who is a founding member of the Soul Rebels, a brass band out of New Orleans that takes a rather contemporary approach to the notion of the traditional brass band. They're going to be playing at the Canopy Club in Urbana tomorrow night. And we'll hear more about that from Lumar LeBlanc. First part of our show, however, return appearance by members of Red Mask Players in Danville Community Theater there. They are opening To Kill a Mockingbird on February 1st, the adaptation of Harper Lee's well-known novel. And we have two of the actors and the stage director for the production who are with us here right now to talk about it and also to give us a short scene or two. Leslie Boedeker is the director, and she's brought along Andrew Peters, who plays the role of Atticus Finch, and Brandon Parks, who plays the role of Tom Robinson. Thanks all very much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
To Kill a Mockingbird, of course, a classic not only of literature, but also it's become a classic in film as well. And I guess I probably wasn't aware that it had been turned into a stage play, but I suppose that happened a long time ago.
Yes, it did actually happen a long time ago. It is significantly different than the movie. So if you are a fan of the movie, you're not going to necessarily be disappointed by coming to see our production, but you're going to get to see a whole new look at the characters that you loved in the movie.
And I have seen the movie, I have read the novel, and I have to admit that the images that have stuck are in fact the images from the film, so I don't remember how closely that was tied to the novel. Follow-up question to that statement is, how closely is the play tied to the novel?
Well, like any pieces of literature, when you take something that's hundreds of pages long and you try to shake it down into 100 pages, a lot of the nuances are lost, which is one of the things that we as performers had to distill from the novel to keep these characters real and to keep them alive. But it is fairly faithful to the novel. They took some of the major events from the novel and kept them as the plot and eliminated some of the smaller, less important aspects of the novel.
As one I'm sure you'd have to do in a film as well.
True.
Although I'm always amazed by so many films that take a book, you know, if they were based on a novel or some other kind of book, and then they'll add things, you know, that weren't there. I'm guessing that doesn't happen with the play.
No, that definitely does not happen with the play. But one of the things that when you're doing something that's in a stationary location is you're not going to see any automobiles, such as in the movie, and other aspects like that that you can do in a film, having different locations, having something going on in the schoolyard, having something going on in the courtroom. You had to get a little more creative to try to keep everything in one location, unlike what you can do with film.
Let's remind folks, or maybe inform folks who may not have read the book or seen the film or seen a previous production of the stage play. What is To Kill a Mockingbird about? What's the basic story?
Well, like all great pieces of literature, people, I think, always pick one aspect of the literature, and that's what sticks in their mind, and that is the courtroom scenes that we're going to be reproducing for you here in a few moments. But in my mind, that's really not what the book is about, the play or the film. It is about three young individuals in a very difficult time, just after the Depression in the 1930s, and their coming-of-age story, how they learn about racism, how they learn about how the world of adults work. And it's really about the loss of innocence. And the courtroom scene is just one of the big scenes in the movie. And it's a very important, pivotal turning point for these three children to lose their innocence. But it's, I don't think it's really what the novel is about.
So the Scout is the young person I remember.
Yes.
Who is the daughter of the lawyer.
Correct.
Atticus Finch. And who are the other two?
His son, Jem Finch, and then a neighbor friend that comes to spend the summer with them, Dill.
And the progress, the courtroom scene, the trial centers around, well, it's a trial of a young black man who is accused of raping a young girl.
Yes, he is accused of raping a mature woman of 19 whose father and herself are racist. And she was the one that acted inappropriately. The young man did not, and is on trial basically for his life. If he's found guilty, he will go to the electric chair. But in 1935, it was such a different time period, and the children are all sure, because Tom is not guilty, that he is going to be acquitted. And unfortunately, he is not. He is found guilty, and he does unfortunately end up dying. So that's one of the big major changes. These children think that the world is all fairness, is all love, and they find out that there's unfairness, there's cruelty, and unfortunately loss.
And then the role of the lawyer, Atticus Finch, is central here, and his struggles in dealing with the society he's part of.
Correct.
And he is somehow looked up to the black folk who are in this community.
He is definitely your liberal in the community. He has friends that are from the black community. He has lost his wife. So his two children, Scout and Jem, are being raised by his black housekeeper, which for the time it happened. But Calpurnia is given the respect that she deserves.
She's the housekeeper.
She's the housekeeper. And she's given respect. And the children look to her as a surrogate mother, which if anyone has seen the movie The Help, we know that these individuals did raise white children's, white people's children's, but they didn't necessarily get the respect that they deserve.
Atticus Finch, we have Andrew Peters, and by the way, we're talking about Red Mask Players production of To Kill a Mockingbird. Leslie Bodick is the director. She's been letting us know some of the background and some of the story here. Andrew, what did it take for you to wrap yourself around this role?
This role has been a big challenge, I think, just because it is so iconic in both the written literature as well as some very big shoes to fill in film, as you mentioned, as a classic film as much as it is a classic novel. I think people look to Gregory Peck's performance as Atticus Finch as something to really aspire to. And I can only hope that I can in some way attempt to fill those shoes. But Atticus is he's a complex character who really, as a single father, as an older father, someone who got started late, so to speak, has to try to raise his children in as fair of a manner as he can, as well as loving a manner as he can. But really, as Leslie was saying, with Atticus being one of the few white people in the town who really tries to get along on an equal footing with the African American members of the community, he goes out of his way to take the kind of justice that's the basis of his profession as a lawyer and really put it into action in his everyday life as well.
Brandon Parks is playing the accused, Tom Robinson. What has been the challenge for you to put yourself back into a role, such as this, which takes place at an earlier time in the 20th century when attitudes towards black people are very different than it is now?
Yeah, I obviously was not a slave, so to portray his role as someone who was basically just a slave and just worked day to day, just to survive, just to make any kind of, anything to eat, it's very different. But the sitting there on stage and actually being him, the atmosphere, you actually start to feel sorry for this man, the looks that I get from the other actors has really been helping me to reach back and to my own people that have gone through this struggle before. And I'm actually quite honored to be able to have the opportunity to feel some sort of, I guess you can say, modesty and just humble that I am, I'm a free black man nowadays. So,
we have a scene from *To Kill a Mockingbird* with Brandon and Andrew. This is part of the courtroom scene.
Yes,
one of the courtroom scene.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we just begin?
Certainly. Did you ever go on the place again?
Yes, sir.
When?
I went lots of times.
Under what circumstances? Why did you go on the place lots of times?
She called me in. Seemed like every time I passed by yonder, she'd have something for me to do. Chopping kindling or toting water for her.
Were you paid for your services?
No, sir. Not after the first time she offered me a nickel. But I was glad to do it. Mr. Yule didn't seem to help her none, and neither did the children. And I knowed she ain't had no nickels to spare.
Where were the other children?
They were always around, all over the place.
Would Miss Mayella talk to you?
Yes, sir. She talked to me.
Did you ever, at any time, go on the Yule property? Did you ever step foot on the Yule property without an express invitation from one of them?
Oh, no, sir, Mr. Finch. I never did, and I wouldn't do that, sir.
Tom, what happened to you on the evening of November 21st?
Mr. Finch, I was going home as usual that evening. And when I passed the old place, Miss Mayella was on the porch like she said she were. It seemed real quiet-like, and I didn't quite know why. She called to me to come there and help her a minute. Well, I went inside the fence and looked for some kindling to work on, but I didn't see none. And she says, no, I got something for you to do in the house. The old door was off its hinges. I said, you got a screwdriver, Miss Mayella? And she said she had. Well, I went up the steps, and she motioned for me to come inside. I went in and looked at the door, and I said, Miss Mayella, this door look all right. And those hinges was all right. And then she shut the door. And Mr. Finch, I was wondering why it was so quiet-like, and it come to me that there wasn't a child on the place, not one of them. And I said, Miss Mayella, where are the children?
Go on, Tom.
I say, where are the children? And she says, she was laughing sort of, and she says they all gone to town to get ice creams. She says, took me a slap year to save 7 nickels, but I done it. They all gone to town.
Tom, what did you say then?
I said something like, "Why, Miss Mayella, that's right smart of you to treat him like that." And she said, "You think so?" I don't think she understood what I was thinking. I meant it was smart of her to save like that and nice of her to treat him.
I understand. Go on.
I said, "I best be going. I couldn't do nothing for her." And she says, "Oh, yes, I could." And I asked her what. And she says, "Just step on that chair yonder and get that box down from on top of the shift robe."
Not the same one you busted up.
No, sir. Another one. One most as tall as the room. So I done what she told me, and I was just reaching when she grabbed me right around the legs, and Mr. Finch, she scared me so bad I hopped down and turned that chair over. And that was the only thing, the only furniture disturbed in that room, Mr. Finch, when I left it. I swear before God.
What happened after you turned the chair over? Tom, you've sworn to tell the whole truth. What happened after that?
Answer the question.
When I got down off the chair, she sort of jumped at me.
Jumped? Violently?
No, sir. She hugged me. She hugged me right around the waist.
Tom, what did she do then?
She reached up and kissed me on the side of the face. She said she had never kissed a grown man before, and so she might as well start with a nigger. She say, "Kiss me back, nigger." And I say, "Miss Mayella, let me out of here." And I tried to run, but she got her back to the door, and I had to push her. I didn't want to harm her, Mr. Finch. I said, "Let me pass." But just when I say it, Mr. Yule yonder come a-hollering through the window.
What did he say?
Something not fitting to say. Not fitting for these folks and these children to hear.
Scene from Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird, or the adaptation of it, by Christopher Sergel, perhaps is the way he says his name, which is being put on by Red Mask Players Community Theater in Danville at the Catherine Randolph Theater. The show opens on February 1st, runs through the 3rd, and then again from the 8th through the 10th, with Friday and Saturday performances at 8 o'clock. Sunday performances start at 2 o'clock. And you can go to their website to get more information about the play, on the season, and how to obtain tickets. The web address is redmaskplayers.com. In the role of Atticus Finch, we heard Andrew Peters. In the role of Tom Robinson, Brandon Parks. And the director of the show, who has been with us on this program today, is Leslie Boedeker. I want to say thanks to all three of you for coming on today, and break a leg, as they say.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Live and Local here on FM 90.9. Support for our broadcast today comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products for hospitals and patients throughout our region. Blood donations help save the lives of the injured and critically ill. Information is available at bloodservices.org. Stay tuned next for a conversation with one of the founding members of the Soul Rebels brass band out of New Orleans, who will be playing in Urbana tomorrow night. We'll be right back. That was a song written by and made popular initially by the Eurythmics. It's called Sweet Dreams Are Made of This. And it's a performance here, an arrangement by the Soul Rebels, a brass band, based in New Orleans. And they are coming to the Canopy Club in Urbana for a show tomorrow night, with the show starting at 8 o'clock with a performance by the Duke of Uke and his Novelty Orchestra, which is a local band. And then the Soul Rebels coming on after that. One of the founding members of the Soul Rebels is a percussionist snare drummer in the band named Lumar LeBlanc. He is with me now here on Live and Local. Thanks very much for joining us on the show.
Oh, man, how you doing? It's a pleasure to be, you know, given the opportunity to, you know, have our music played around the world, and we're excited about coming to do the show.
Well, it's I got to hear a little bit about New Orleans brass bands, probably about a year ago from another group that was coming through our area. And you guys are taking what is, I guess, the traditional brass band / marching band approach that grew up in New Orleans, and adding some contemporary elements to it, as people could tell from this song. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the roots of the New Orleans brass band and how you've branched off a bit?
Well, the New Orleans brass band tradition grew from the streets of New Orleans as more of a useful element for the social aid and pleasure clubs, and also out of a paramilitary type formation. It has the big sousaphone. It has two moving drums, one a snare and one a bass drum with a cymbal. And you have trumpets, trombones, and also we add a tenor saxophone. And in New Orleans, as I said, that tradition came about right around the turn of the century. I guess the military instruments were picked up by African Americans and utilized as a form of how you want to say it, when a family member would die, these social aid and pleasure clubs would give them a send-off with the New Orleans jazz funeral. And so then you speed it up. You have Louis Armstrong, who took the songs and brought them to the stage with a more, how would you say it, band acoustic setup with a drum set, not having the two separate drummers and probably using an upright bass instead of the sousaphone. And then you move back into the realm of the parade element, which is called second line parading, where they use the type of entertainment not just for funerals, but for a joyous, well, how could you say it, for a more festive atmosphere, where you had paraders, people parading and dancing in the streets. And then you move into, I would say, Olympia Brass Band, who made the art form world-renowned. Olympia, Dijon's Olympia Brass Band, utilized, their music was sought to be used in movies, in all type of commercial efforts by people when they open up car dealerships. I mean, football, professional NFL games, you can see Olympia playing for like the first Super Bowls and when they came to Tulane Stadium and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, the music has had a whole lot of changes and growth throughout the years. And when it came to the Soul Rebel ears, we wanted to add a more stage element that Louis Armstrong had, but still have the sousaphone and the two separate drummers. And we wanted to incorporate urban pop music that included hip-hop, that included jazz, reggae, country, funk, all type of elements. And New Orleans makes it easily accessible because of the Mardi Gras parade element and also because of things like, say, the Super Bowl, when the city is known for hosting the best parties in the world. And so when people come in town, they want to utilize one of the city assets, which is their musical element, along with the food and the hospitality and everything else. But that has afforded us the ability to be involved in mainstream endeavors.
Well, since you mentioned it, I just saw a notice on the website for the Canopy Club, in fact, where you're playing tomorrow night, that you're going to be playing as the house band for the second annual NFL Honors Super Bowl Eve on CBS on February 2nd.
Yes, that was a very surprising honor. It came to New Orleans and wanted to use, the NFL wanted to use a band from New Orleans, and so we had to go through a rigorous, if you want to say, auditioning procedure where we didn't have to actually go play, but they had listened to different CDs and EPK press kits of bands that they wanted to choose from, and out of a whole lot of bands, they chose Soul Rebels, and we're honored to be chosen for that. That'll be, like I said, that'll be a real feather in our cap. We already started the practice. As you can imagine, it's synchronized down to the millisecond. And we have to play music that they gave us, and they're also wanting to use our original music.
That's fantastic. Congratulations on that. So that's going to be on Saturday, February 2nd from 9 to 11 Eastern Time on CBS. That'll be hosted by Alec Baldwin.
Yes.
And with a bunch of current and former NFL players involved in that as well on the Super Bowl Eve. That's fantastic. Well, you got a, as I understand it, you got your, not your start exactly, but you got kind of kicked into the mainstream through a gig opening for the Neville Brothers. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, Cyril Neville, who is one of the brothers of the four famous brothers that you know, Cyril Neville was real close to the band and still is. He had a group of second generation Nevilles called Deaf Generation. That was a band that wanted to mix like a gumbo roux, if I may use that analogy, of New Orleans music mixed with pop music. And some of the members of Soul Rebels were members of Deaf Generation. But at the time, we weren't the Soul Rebels. We were Dejon's Young Olympia Brass Band. And I was in the Young Olympia side of the game. And you had some of the other members who were moonlighting in Deaf Generation and playing with the Young Olympians. And what occurred is that Cyril heard the Young Olympians and wanted us to open up for his brothers, the Neville Brothers, with our brass band element at Tipitina's, which is a famous club in New Orleans on Napoleon Avenue. And when he heard us, he had already heard us playing, you know, before he just threw us on the stage. He already knew we had the goods. But we really brought him that night. We were so excited, my friend. We were so, pumped up to be on the main stage. I mean, could you imagine? We're going from virtual obscurity to being on a main stage in the biggest, most visible club in New Orleans with probably the most visible band from New Orleans, the Neville Brothers. And when we finished, he was like, man, y'all different, man. Y'all some rebels for this music, for this brass band music, but rebels in a positive sense. And then y'all got soul. Why not be called the Soul Rebels? So we were actually doing gigs already as Young Olympians, and when we would do the more aggressive music, we didn't have a name yet, but that's how it kind of came about.
When you say more aggressive music, meaning incorporating more of the contemporary urban sounds?
Yes, definitely. Right on it. The traditional, when you think of New Orleans jazz, you always see a person in the French Quarter playing Saints Go Marching In or Bourbon Street Parade, which are classics and songs that we love. And if we have to play them, we'll play them with the zeal and zest that we were brought up doing it. But we were young at the time, still a young band, but at the time we were real young and brash, and we wanted to play the music of our generation. We had just had this idea that you can take mainstream music, you can make music that sounds contemporary, sell records with it, put it on the stage, and do it like a Public Enemy, like a Eurythmics, like a, I don't know, at that time you had Tribe Called Quest, Whitney Houston, obviously Mr. Michael Jackson, rest his soul, was still doing it. We felt that we could do that with brass band music. So that's when what I mean by more aggressive. It transposed from what was then up until now and beyond.
When did you guys actually get started?
1990, I would have to say, is when we were physically, bodily together playing. But with the official name incorporated and, you know, stamped in and everything, we have it listed at 1991. So on record, it's 1991, but we actually have been playing in early 1990 together.
So you've already passed your 20th anniversary a year
or
two ago.
I often don't realize it, but you're right. Time flies, I guess, when you're having an enormous amount of fun.
Well, you can tell from the music, and let's hear another example. This is a song called Unlock Your Mind. Is this an original from Soul Rebels?
The composition of it is a twist. If you would hear the original song, which is not by the Soul Rebels, it's more of a gospel-y tune, you wouldn't even know. But the producer of the record, Scott Billington, brought the song, and we flipped it total reggae style and incorporated Cyril Neville with his beautiful vocals to sing the song. But it's actually a gospel tune by another group.
So are we hearing Cyril Neville in this song then?
Yes, he's on the title cut, Unlock Your Mind.
That's fantastic. Well, let's give it a listen. Unlock Your Mind, it's the Soul Rebels, including my guest on this portion of Live and Local, who's the snare drummer, Lumar LeBlanc. They're going to be at the Canopy Club in Urbana for a show tomorrow night that starts at 8 o'clock, along with the Duke of Uke and his novelty orchestra. And you're listening to Live and Local here on FM 90.9.
And then you'll be free to clear your head. Oh yeah, unlock your mind. You can't look back, you gotta look ahead instead. So a bad love affair that got you down, but you're not the only one to ever get messed around. Set your goal on being free. Love is waving at you, but you're too hurt. Too hurt to see. Unlock your mind, and then you'll be free to clear your head. You can't look back, you gotta look ahead instead. Oh yeah. So many good things are passing you by, cause all you do now, sit alone and cry. True love, wanna come to you, but those past memories let it come through, no, no. Tight. Hey, hey.
No, you can't look back. You gotta look ahead instead. Yeah, yeah. Gonna love you in the morning. Gonna love you every night. Girl, you don't have to worry. Gonna make everything alright. Yeah, yeah. You and me, baby.
Song called Unlock Your Mind, played by the Soul Rebels here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. They'll be in Urbana at the Canopy Club tomorrow night for a show. And my guest, Lumar LeBlanc, who's the snare drummer in the band. I don't know if it's all, but, or is it all of your band that actually were music students at various universities?
Yes, a lot of us met via the collegiate level of education and music. The founding members go back further than that. We knew each other in high school and elementary school some. And then when we got to college, we kind of all merged together. Myself and Derek met or knew of each other, let me put it that way, in college, because our marching bands were rivalry bands. If you ever see the movie Drumline, that's basically what we were involved in, that kind of black college marching exciting band doing the dance steps and the choreography and all that. And now we had members then too and now who went through jazz programs at universities. So we have a wide array of symphonic, jazz, and marching band type training.
And you mentioned Derek. Derek Moss is one of the co-founders, along with yourself, and he's the bass drummer. So you two sort of split up the percussion duties.
Yes, Derek Moss, the other original member with myself, on trombone we have Corey Payton and Paul Robinson. On trumpet we have Marcus Hubbard and Julian Gosson. And on the tenor saxophone it's Eron Williams. And on the sousaphone, Edward Lee. But Derek and I are the original members from that first band, and we always wanted to focus on sounding like one drummer, even though it's two people. Derek likes to say one mind, you know, two minds thinking as one. And that comes from our training in the drum section, core-style element of marching band, where you have to focus on sounding like precisely one drummer, where you have to really pay attention to what the other one is saying, and where you have to like do a question and answer thing. It's really something we were trained in from kids and growing up in New Orleans.
I understand that this past year, 2012, was a particularly good one for you. Your major label debut album. And some big tours. What are some of the other highlights that happened last year, and what do you have in store so far for 2013 besides the big Super Bowl pre-show on CBS?
Well, you want to know like past highlights?
Yeah, a little bit last year, and maybe especially what's coming up.
Well, definitely coming up, like I said, is the NFL Honors, and we're also involved in another NFL performance that they probably haven't publicized yet. So definitely those two are on unanimous heights for the band. We have a tour scheduled for Australia that's coming up. I mean, we just have such a busy schedule. It's so busy, I just keep my bags packed at the door. My wife and my kids just keep my bags packed at the front door. So the touring definitely is a highlight. I mean, we're going to go back to cities we went before and definitely do some new things musically. We want to try to get another album going. We're constantly creating music. And so that's always, a big glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel that we're constantly searching for that never goes out. We're trying to get that next great sound. The Metallica show playing with Kanye West and you know, during the Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie function were definitely some high points in our career. Snoop Dogg was also, and Rihanna were on that ticket. That was a show we did in New Orleans. So, I mean, we're always encountering new elements. I'm sure I'm missing on things. I perform so much, I just miss out on certain things. But, oh, man, there's so many things.
You got something like 250 shows a year now.
Yeah, it seems like it's increasing. We're trying to tell our touring people we want to keep doing it, but, you know, it's getting high up. So that's a plus. You always want to have too much work, not have enough.
Absolutely.
You don't ever not be able to do it, but we're getting more and more things going.
The Soul Rebels from New Orleans, brass band from New Orleans, is going to be playing at the Canopy Club in Urbana tomorrow night. Show starts at 8 with the Duke of Uke and his Novelty Orchestra, a local band, and then the Soul Rebels a little later than that. Lumar LeBlanc, who is the snare drummer with the band and one of the founding members, my guest here on Live and Local. We're going to go out with a song called 504, which has specific significance to New Orleans. You want to talk about that,
yeah.
And how does the song reflect that meaning?
Well, 504 was brought about to signify the area code for New Orleans. After the devastation of Hurricane Katrina, we basically only had our cell phones to communicate with because everyone was displaced. And whenever we would see the phone ring with a 504 number, it could have been a bill collector. We were happy to pick it up and talk. And so even though the storm hit, we were kind of still on tour. And when the storm hit, we lost our instruments, and we didn't know how we were going to get the ball rolling again. And when we did get going, we had some instruments donated, and love was shown by the Grammy organization, Music Cares, the Actors Fund. With, like I said, Brad Pitt's always been in our corner. They just gave us a lot. And once we got going again, I mean, all over the world, when we would say New Orleans, rather, people would just give with love and joy. So we made a song called 504 to signify the area code of New Orleans, and it just pays tribute to the strength of New Orleans having recovered from that tragedy.
Well, congratulations on your own recovery as a band from that. And
thank you very much.
All the great things you've got going on. Lumar LeBlanc of the Soul Rebels, here's their tune 504 on Live and Local.
Enjoy yourself, everybody. question and so much to say. But sometimes you gotta let the chips fall where they may and enjoy yourself. Enjoy yourself. Everybody, get up on the floor. Everybody, get up on the floor. Everybody, get up on the floor. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy yourself. Everybody, get up on the floor. Everybody, get up on the floor. Everybody, get up on the floor. Enjoy yourself.
The tune was called 504, reference to the area code of much of New Orleans, and it was performed by the Soul Rebels, a brass band with a twist based in New Orleans. They're going to be performing at the Canopy Club in Urbana on the University of Illinois campus on Goodwin Avenue tomorrow. The show starts at 8 o'clock with the Duke of Uk and his novelty orchestra, and then the Soul Rebels coming up. You have to be 18 to or over to enter the Canopy Club. And doors will open at 7 o'clock. You can go to their website for more information on that and other performances that are happening there. Our programs on FM 90.9 today are made possible with support from Columbia Street Roastery, offering over 30 varieties and blends of whole bean or ground coffee at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Coffee, tea, and chai are available from their retail store, in local restaurants, and through Columbia Street Roastery's coffee service. More information is available at 352-9713. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Appreciate your company today. On tomorrow's show, we'll be hearing from singer-songwriter Ben Bedford, who is lives in our area and has made a national reputation for himself, I believe. He'll be performing live in our studio. First of two singer-songwriters we'll have this week, also local, Chris Corkery will be with us on Thursday. Also on Thursday, I'll be talking with Alistair Willis, who is music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, about the chamber orchestra concerts that the ISO is doing this weekend in Springfield and Bloomington. And then the rest of the week will shape up as it will. Here are some other events you can see and hear live in our listening area over the next couple of days. The Russian National Ballet Theater is performing Don Quixote at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana tonight at 7 o'clock. Then tomorrow it's Romeo and Juliet at the same time. And on Thursday, Swan Lake. All those performances at 7 o'clock. The Clark Gibson Quartet will be at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 7 o'clock. At Clark Bar in Champaign, it's singer-songwriters Doug Buchanan, John Coppice, and William Dicker. That's at 6:30 this evening. The State Street Jazz Quintet is at Westbrook Auditorium at the Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington. I'm not sure about that, though. It just says Westbrook, Bloomington, 8 o'clock tonight. University of Illinois Jazz faculty will be performing at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. The Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana are presenting Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. 8 o'clock Wednesday through next Sunday, and then those performances, I think, continue for a while. Yet they'll be on our show to preview that on Friday. It's Jammin' Jimmy Bean and Friends, an acoustic experience at Mentley's Pub in Champaign, Wednesday evening at 6 o'clock. The weekly traditional Irish music session is at Dublin O'Neill's in Champaign, Wednesday night at 8:30. Guest oboist Marlen Vavrikova will perform at Smith Memorial Hall on the University of Illinois campus Wednesday night at 7:30. That's in Urbana. Ian Hobson, a pianist, continues his series of Johannes Brahms instrumental music with piano. He's also joined by pianist Samir Golescu. That'll be Thursday night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. You're listening to 90.9 WYLFM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Coming up in just about a minute, it's All Things Considered from NPR. Here is a tune by the Andreas Kapsalis Trio called Tango.